Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harter. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's episode, we'll be discussing all the action from match day 2. It was definitely a weekend that followed the rhetoric or the method, the tried and true method of Zweite Bundesliga football. Lots of goals, controversy, drama, and of course, late game heroics. It had it all on this match day. And yeah, we look forward to bringing it to you in the next hour and 10, maybe hour and 20. Depends, because there may be a section that may take a bit longer than per usual. That means we should introduce my partner in crime once again, Eva Lottebola. Eva, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hopefully my Wi-Fi is not as tired as I am and is not going to go like last week. I would understand. There are a couple of games where I would think it's a good time to go now. But yeah, I think it's really good that our podcast is not a video podcast, because I kind of see a reflection of my face in your face. Like our under-eye circuits match very perfectly. Second match day, both already tired of this. This is going great. Or I am tired of it. Let's put it that way. But still very happy, obviously, to be here. Yeah.
As am I, of course. After working 8 hours in managing people and clients and other kinds of malarkey. But yes, there was 9 games that really encapsulated an interesting weekend of football. And we're going to start with... Now, I need clarification. Is it the Frankenland derby? Is it the Franconia derby? I had this discussion with people. I have no idea. I'm going to go with the Frankenland derby and that Nürnberg are now kings of Franconia. That's how it's going to go. As Nürnberg took on Fürth and they took victory in their derby. I believe it's their 139th victory in this... this very famous regional derby. And their goal scorers, Christoph Daferner, who opened the scoring on 15 minutes when he... we just kind of bundled the ball in with his chest, body, anything. After Quadwa Dua's initial header was tipped by Andreas Linder and Daferner put it into the back of the net. Both teams had chances in this game. It wasn't as if like Fürth just kind of lied flat. Had their opportunities, but they weren't very high-quality chances. Christian Matania made a couple of really good saves, as did Andreas Linder for Fürth. Nürnberg did get the second goal and the sealer, and it was the Joker trio who all came on at the same time, and they were all involved in the goal when Erik Vikessa found Talon Duman, who then found Manuel Winsheimer, who tapped home a nice, easy goal. They practically walked it in because the defense really didn't do a whole lot to stop it. And that was enough to see Nürnberg get on the board for the first 3 points of the season. Who should we start with first? Let's talk about Nürnberg, because the biggest question mark we had heading into this game was defensively. They were a bit meh. They weren't great. They were a bit harmless. We saw some changes in personnel. Kastrup got the start in midfield. Johannes Geis was a massive in for them. And it's fair to say he played an integral part in helping Nürnberg take the 3 points on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, the funny thing is kind of that we talked about this last week with Flo Zenger. And you got to say that in this game, Nürnberg used the... I don't want to say mistakes, because there weren't really big mistakes by Fürth in this game. They were just lacking some sort of determination in defending. But they used this a bit better, and because they, with kind of the second or third chance they got in this game, they scored their first goal. That was really important for them, and I really liked the combination with Adua and Dafeana. I know that in the pre-game matches, Flosseng, I said he wasn't sure where this is going to go, but I think that was really good work. And Dafeana had a chance before this as well. And you gotta say, Fürth was too passive for at least like 60 minutes. I mean, they had two shots on target in the first half, but all in all, too harmless. Second half was a bit better, but still, Nürnberg had the majority of possession. They just looked better. I'm sorry, that was stupid. They looked better. They looked more lively. They looked better in the duels, and they looked a bit closer in scoring the second goal. And as you've mentioned, really, really good teamwork of the three jokers. Vekeser on the lines was really impressive. I know the commentator said that he was really focusing on Dumann, but I was kind of leaning towards Vekeser for that goal because he keeps the ball on the pitch in the game, and I thought that was very impressive. And Nürnberg showed, at least in this game, why they got certain players. But I think as you've mentioned, the whole persona guys is very interesting, because throughout the years we know what we got from him, but I think you always really see that he was missing from the team when he was missing out on one game and respect the other. I think that's a very good quality for him, for Nürnberg. I'm always still surprised that he's still playing, because I feel like he has been there for so long, and at the same time he seems like he's not aging. I think in the end it was two less from Fürth. They concentrated a bit too much on hoping that it's going to be a foul on a Gota before the 1-0. It's not a foul in my opinion. I think if the ref blows the whistle initially, you can't really say it's a huge mistake, but it can't be taken away by VAR afterwards. A bit similar to the whole thing we talked about with Klose and Kinsombi last week, that it's too less for taking away the goal in this instance. And I think Fürth knows that they didn't lost the game because of that, but just because especially the first half was lacking everything. And if it's Max Christiansen who has the most shots and goal for your team,
yeah,
I'm not sure you really got to talk about. I mean, Ugota was nearly not to be seen in this game, and I think that's something that Nürnberg did very, very well compared to the week before, where we saw Gota a lot, talked about him a lot. They did a very good job of keeping him out of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's where Geist really came into his own, and he just a defensive presence, and it's almost as if he was in almost like a tagging role. It was where he goes, you go, just make sure he doesn't influence the game. And as we saw when Hogota was really taken out of the game, Fürth didn't have a lot of options that were really lively. The two strikers up front in Abiyama and Arquette just were non-existent. They practically could have been on the bench, and that's how little impact they had on the game, which just shows why Geis is important to play as that number six, patrolling the midfield, being a distributor in possession, but also taking playmakers out of the game, which is what he was able to do. There is some more stuff that's happened post-game. James Lawrence, Welsh international, he's going to Nürnberg. He's at Nürnberg at this point. Formerly of St. Pauli, he was a free agent at the time. St. Pauli had some words about that, but doesn't really matter. Both, obviously, it's the Pokal this weekend, so no Zweite Bundesliga. Nürnberger at Karl Marienborn, that's correct? Yep, I get the nods of
Marine born, but yeah, you're
married
fine.
born. I want to get it correct, that's all. Regionalliga Westside, Fürther at Stuttgarter Kickers. I think I got that one right. Stuttgarter Kickers, surprisingly, are in the Oberliga, Baden-Württemberg, which was surprising because of, I reckon when I started watching football, they were very much a Drittliga side, and a lot has changed. Now, let's head to the Volksparkstadion. A somber scene on Sunday afternoon. Lots of touching tributes to Uwe Seeler, one of the greatest, one of the icons of German football, really. He passed during the week. Very touching tribute by with the choreo, both sets of fans, Hansa fans and Hamburg fans. Very, very respectful. Kudos also to Adidas, who were able to alter the jersey, Uns Uwe on the shirt, and the big number 9 on the left shoulder sleeve. And very difficult game, of course, for Hamburg, and it showed. They didn't have it their own way, and it certainly seemed their mind was elsewhere. Hansa had a bunch of really good opportunities throughout the game, and as it seemed that 90 minutes had come about, Marcus Kolker had made a bunch of really good saves. He made that one on Robert Glatzel midway through the second half. Real reactionary, just top goalkeeping. And he was spectacular in this game. Talk about a man inspired. And then Rostock, like they did on match day 2 of last season when they upset Hanover, they beat Hamburg. It's brilliant work by Kai Pruger, who does enough to stay off Jonas David, and then he finds Kevin Schumacher, and the angle that Schumacher has is so minimal, and he finds the bottom corner, and he was as surprised as anyone, it has to be said, when he celebrated that one goal, and Rostock take the 3 points. We know Rostock much better away from home last season, and they've done it again. They've stolen victory, but even though the stats will say it's a very one-sided affair, Rostock held their own, and many may argue that they were worthy of the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this, if you don't use your chances, there might be the case that the opponents choose to, well, if you don't want out, we take it. And I mean, you got to say, even though Hamburg had 8 shots on goal in the first half, only one of them was on target, and I think that was Kittel after 38 minutes. So it took a very long time to get in the game. Robert Glatzel was not to be seen for at least, like, I don't know, 70 minutes into the game, when in the last 20 minutes he decided, well, I'm going to do something for this team. And then he had two chances to make it 1-0. But yeah, you really got to say that the determination or the last bit of accuracy was missing from Hamburg. I mean, it's understandable. It wasn't easy. Message came on Thursday night, I think. And you could really see how the whole football world, even, I think there was even condolences by clubs like Real Madrid, offered their condolences, because I think the thing you have to know about Uwe Seeler, he was one of the people that you were enjoying talking about nowadays football. I know that with a lot of people from his day and age, you're just very annoyed because everything they said, everything was better in the good olden days, and Uwe Seeler was very authentic in what he did, and the way that, for example, majority of St. Pauli fans talked about him, that he was Hamburg, that he was one of the Hamburg people who was really, someone who was welcomed at the Milan Tor, and I think that's he's going to be missed. I mean, it's really a shame that with that whole. Yeah, it was a kind of celebration, a celebration of the life of Uwe Seeler, that then some Hamburg fans thought it would be a good idea to hold up a very homophobic banner. I don't know why we still have to talk about this, that this isn't funny, it's just really ruining any kind of... remembrance, and we actually know that this wouldn't be something that Uwe Seeler would have like treat. So yeah, that was really a shame. And yeah, you gotta say, all in all, especially with the whole Vuskovic situation, first of all, why do people think it's a good idea to show broken thumbs? And was like, look at what happened here. Great, thank you. Didn't want to see that. Just ate. And I mean, then Vuskovic was kind of subbed off. Then he brought in again and was then subbed off. And you could really, maybe this was one of the reasons why this late goal was being made possible, because it looks like the Hamburg defense wasn't sure anymore who was going to play, and it looked a bit weird. But you got to say, especially if you look at the second half of the game, you could say that it was a deserved win for Rostock, because they really stepped up in that second half. A lot of Hansa there. And in the end, they just were a bit more determined to get this.
Yeah, they did all the one percenters. They were flinging their bodies around in the box to block shots, and like it was a concede at, you know, don't concede at all costs mentality. They were fantastic on the defensive end, and yeah, I mean, if you look at the goal and you see Heil, who came on as a second half sub, he gets a bit lost in the transition, doesn't know whether to go with Schumacher. Schumacher just creates the space, and when Heil is actually aware of the situation, it's far too late, and Schumacher's about to pop on goal. And yeah, the second half was really kind of a microcosm of all the things we talk about with Hamburg, which is they don't have another way of winning. They only can win one way, which is ball possession, short passes, you know, getting to the byline. And when they basically block the box with 10, you know, 9-10 guys, yeah, it's going to be hard to score. And they found it really difficult. They had their chances. David almost equalized in the sixth or seventh minute of stoppage time. But yeah, a well-deserved win for Hansa, an important win for Hansa because of the defeat on match day one. And they get their season up and running for Hamburg. Some of their new signings, we talked highly about Königsdorfer, Laszlo Benisch. Yet to be seen in their opening two games. I guess the cup round is a good way for them to reset. They've got Bayreuth in the cup. That's away. Tricky little fixture. No, Hamburg have struggled in first rounds of cups. Not last year, of course, they made that long cup run. But previous years, they've had a little trouble against Dritte Liga sides. Hansa, they're at Lübeck, so only a short little journey for them. Also a winnable cup fixture for them. And finally, in Group 1, we head to the newly named Heinz von Heiden Arena, not the HDI Arena anymore. Heinz von Heiden, which also, once upon a time, was the shirt sponsor for Hannover. Hannover took on St. Pauli. This was the top Spieler. A top game obviously needs a top referee. Felix Weyer was in charge of this game. So, let's get to it. It was all St. Pauli in the first half. They were really the dominant side, and it was no surprise when they took the lead just 4 minutes in. Johannes Eggestein starting his list of goals with goal number one in a St. Pauli jersey. Matanovic does really well to head the ball down, and Eggestein, though pressed by Derek Kuhn, does enough and trickles the ball past Robert Seeler. St. Pauli continued to press, and they looked likely for a second, but they weren't able to find one, and then the game kind of changed a little bit. As the ball came in from the left-hand side, Adam Zsugola handles the ball. We'll discuss it later, but anyway, he apparently gives away a penalty. Sebastian Kirk from the spot, no dramas at all. That wasn't the weirdest thing that happened in the first half. That was Lert Pakarada trying to pass the ball back to Dennis Marsh, and Dennis Marsh deciding to pick the ball up, which led to an indirect free kick, which we don't see often. But Kirk smashed that 10 feet above the crossbar. St. Pauli was still the better side in the second half. And then a rare mistake from Jackson Irvine positionally. He is late to react, and Derek Kuhn gets his first goal in Hannover colours. It's a deflection. It beats Dennis Marsh, and it looks like Hanover are on their way to securing the 3 points. But we saw this situation last week. Hanover with a chance of getting a result in stoppage time. Pakarada's ball in is not cleared and it finds the head of Jackson Irvine and the Australian makes it 2-2 for him. Bit of Aussie. He's going to do that in the World Cup, just saying he did it in qualification. He scores his second goal of the season and St. Pauli with a well-deserved point, but it should have been 3. We should discuss the penalty, though. We've looked at all the angles. We've had time to digest it. And I don't know what I'm seeing. Maybe there's a hand movement that catches the referee Felix Vaier's eyes. But to me, his hand is tucked against his body and it shouldn't be a penalty. Eva, lay down the track. Is it a penalty or is it not?
Well, for me, it's not a penalty. And the funny thing is, for once, we all looked at the funny little Twitter account by DFB Chiris, who basically wrote, yeah, sorry, guys, the camera angles are not good enough in the second tier. Cool. This is actually what we have been afraid of since it was brought into the second league, that due to the lack of the same infrastructure, that at some stage we're actually going to have two less of pitchers. And I think this is the first time they actually said it's due to that fact. I don't want to know how many times before this had happened. We're going to talk about this whole refereeing situation hopefully soon with the refereeing expert. She's going to explain all things new rules with us. But yeah, I mean, basically the VAR couldn't overrule it because he had not good enough pictures. Congratulations. This is one of the reasons why I'm not 100% behind the VAR, especially second league, because it's just not well equipped enough to have the angles. And if you can't, if TV has better shots on a situation 4 or 5 times, I honestly do not know. I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that they actually changed from Hawkeye to another company this season, who is responsible for the pictures and stuff. I don't know. Can't tell you that. But yeah, for me, it's not a penalty. And I don't know when if Hanover goes into halftime. I mean, it's always a what if you never know. But I'm not sure. What I did like in this game is that Hamburg's defense looked a bit better. Berner really did a lot on letting everyone forget his past week's mistakes. There were at least 2 or 3 situations where he was really proactive going through the ball and handling it. That so for him at least, I thought that was it was a better game. But once again, I think we have both teams here where we still have to talk about the defense, because you spoke about the Pakarada Smash incident. And once again, Smash is doing not a lot for his reputation here. I mean, we talked about him last week, this week he didn't look as confident as well. You could had to Zasha, who is a goalkeeping expert. He actually analyzed all of what Smash did in this game and what he did in the week before. If you want more professional opinion on that, or we have our personal goalkeeping expert here as well. Not wanna demolish any of your opinions, but yeah, I mean, just quickly, I liked the game with Kuhn, or how Kuhn and Nielsen worked in the second half. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know it's just like the whole Pakarada free kick. It's a bit similar to the one from last week. It's
much longer.
It should have been defended. I know what was going on there. It's a, I don't know, page book. How not to defend a Pacarada free kick. I mean, it's so well timed, although it doesn't find a St. Pauli player right away, but because it's put in the middle of the, basically in the middle of the box, and every Hanover player is like, why is this here? Why, how, what should we do with this? And then St. Pauli takes the upper hand. And yeah, compared to last week, maybe this was a very, very deserved point at least, and should have been, as you've mentioned, probably should have been three.
Yeah. It should also be mentioned that you should definitely follow Sasha. He is the GOAT when it comes to goalkeeper analysis, and we definitely need to get him on at some stage for some goalkeeper analysis, because we meant to do it last year, and I may have forgotten. But yes, he definitely needs to come on, because it would be good to see how the goalkeepers stack up to what we see versus what someone who actually spends the time and analyzes them a lot more than, for example, myself. But yeah, that Pacarada ball, by the way, is so precise. It's in the best possible area where a goalkeeper has to decide, can I come for that ball? And Zila immediately knows that he's not going to get there, so he stays. I know he picked up a knock during the game, and there was talk where he could have been subbed off of Weinkauf. He stays at home, but once the ball hits the deck, someone in red has to just boot it somewhere. And what happens is that Berner, who's on the ground at the time, he tries to do something, and it finds the head of Jackson Irvine. And that's just really unlucky, because they defended well. I think Neumann and Berner defensively will be a really good complementary pieces in that back four. But so they've given up four goals on their opening two games, two set piece goals in stoppage time, and they've got TSV Schott Mainz from the Oberliga Rheinland-Pfalz. See, I'm learning every step. The thumbs up, which is good. St. Pauli are at SV Strahlen, Regionalliga Westside. That's the cup. And that's our group one roundup.
Just one last thing, sorry, before I forget that. Besides the pitch, kind of, there was an incident with one Hanover fan who fell down part of the stands, and luckily he has not any kind of difficult or dangerous injuries. He's fine, he's up and running kinda, and he that's why when you at some stage tuned in there was not any support of the Hanover fans, because this is a very common thing. Happened in Bielefeld as well. As soon as there's any kind of emergency, any sort of support is being cancelled, and you try to get in the emergency context and stuff to handle this very quickly. I think sometimes in front of the TV it's not very clear, because obviously the commentator he can't be on Twitter the whole time, where people like me then get their info due to other fans who are informing other people about this. Good thing that nothing bad happened to him, and hopefully, yeah, I think this was already the second time this happened. I don't know if at some stage, so maybe that's a point for discussion, just for stadium safety. But first and foremost, the person is fine. And that's probably the best news from the weekend there.
Absolutely. As it's never nice to hear of situations where people have had, had a fall, or they've fallen sick within the stadium. I know there was a situation in Karlsruhe with Jamie Lawrence, who collapsed after full time, and Karlsruhe and Magdeburg as well, very quick to react. Magdeburg were very quick to get the stretcher out, and also the Karlsruhe fans, covering Lawrence with the flags post game, which was, very respectful, and well done to them as well, because those kinds of scenes you don't really want to see. You just want to know that they're okay, and I think they came out yesterday saying that Lawrence is doing well and is on the road to recovery, which is good to hear. Now let's move to a quick break, and then we'll get back to the action. We're going to start with Fortuna Düsseldorf and Paderborn. Two sides that came off victories in match day one were hoping to make it two on the bounce when they met in Düsseldorf on Friday night. It's Fortuna Düsseldorf and Paderborn. Not for one of the fast starters, Fortuna wasted no time in opening the scoring when Schitter Appelkamp found David Kovnatski, and he put past Janne Kuyt. Kovnatski was on loan midway through last season. He's back, got the start, got the goal, 1-0. Düsseldorf looked very lively in the opening 15 minutes, and they could have had another one. Tim Oberdorf, the second best Oberdorf, had a couple of opportunities, but his efforts were thwarted by Hoot. Then Paderborn found an equaliser. We mentioned Julian Justvan as a creative right wing-back. His elegant pass found Felix Platter, who put a delightful finish past Florian Kastenmeier, and it was one goal apiece. Not happy with just the one assist, Appelkamp made a double. His excellent pass found Rovan Hennings on the half hour, and he volleyed the ball past Hoot 2-1 at the break, and that's how it would stay. Paderborn thought they had an equaliser when Sir Lloyd Conte found Felix Platter, but Conte's run was offside. The result, Düsseldorf in the top three, two wins from two, good times all around. Paderborn had their chances late in the game, but in the end, it wasn't enough to get a result. Eva, we talked about these two sides as potential promotion candidates, more bullish on Fortuna than Paderborn. Paderborn may be a dark horse. Interesting game. It was very, I will say, defensively minded. Neither team really looking to concede. But of course, when you concede within the opening 2 minutes, it does change those mindsets. Düsseldorf doing enough. What impressed you about Fortuna's performance?
Well, I think probably Schinter Appelkamp and the fact that we don't talk about Calhanoglu or his being away now, and I think that's very impressive. And maybe that what we wanted to see from Appelkamp last season which wasn't possible due to injuries and stuff, is. Yeah, he shows it now, and that we were, although it's one season later, that we were kind of right in putting our hopes in him, in, yeah, just his creative part up front. And, yeah, really liked him to be on, yeah, put himself on the assist sheet kind of twice this game. Yeah, and I mean, a lot of what Düsseldorf did here is, yeah, very continuing what they finished. I mean, it seems like they're just continuing the second half of last season. Looks very easygoing. I mean, and as you've mentioned, both teams were defensively stable. I mean, for Paderborn, they couldn't really replicate what they did against Karlsruhe. So as soon as they scored one goal, just put another one on top. It was more like they scored their first goal, and just a couple of minutes after, Henning scored, or Düsseldorf scored again. And in the second half, I mean, as you mentioned, they had the offside goal. But yeah, it could have been three for Düsseldorf as well. It was a very great save by Hood, although in the second half of the game, he... there was the situation where Ginchek is up front of him and he just comes out, runs out of the box towards Ginchek without really going in his way. That was a weird situation. But yeah, I thought that Paderborn just all in all was not as determined as last week. Karlsruhe obviously had something to do because they played, no offense, but against an opponent who knows how to defend and not break in the, I don't know, in 20 minutes completely. But in general, I thought this was advertisement for the Zweite Liga. I think it was a good game to watch. Although it was defensively, there was a lot of good football in this game. So only because a game has good defensive work, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad game to watch. Although one real thing I have to talk about is quickly the goal for Paderborn, because Hoffman just thinks Platter is offside whole time and then doesn't really act towards him and lets Platter roll, and that's how the Paderborn goal is being put together. And they kind of learn from this mistake. And although Paderborn, I did think that really towards the end, 5-6 minutes, it always looked like Düsseldorf is more likely to score than Paderborn, and I think that's why in the end the 3 points for Fortuna are well deserved.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing though with Paderborn, because even though it was 2-1 and Düsseldorf looked comfortable, they just kind of, they're like a little pinch, they just kind of just nip at you a little bit, and then they strike out of nowhere. And the goal that they scored, which was beautiful pass, and they almost replicated it again with really good timing and precision. They are going to be dangerous throughout the season, Paderborn. But yeah, they just didn't. At times, they were kind of nowhere. They were drifting in and out of the game. They allowed Fortuna to almost dictate the defensive aspects of things. And yeah, really good really solid performance for Fortuna. Two wins from two against two pretty good sides. We'll talk about Magdeburg later on, but we're pretty high on them as a promoted side. So they'll take it. Very happy with their performance. They've got kickers Offenbach in the cup. And Paderborn have Einheit. I can't pronounce it. Eva, can you help me out? Who are Paderborn playing? Sorry.
Einheit Wernigerode.
Wernigerode. There we go. Yeah.
It's a very difficult name even for German speakers, I think.
There we go. It's I didn't want to butcher that. I butcher enough names, I think, on the podcast. So yes. They play in the Oberliga. So, interesting test for both sides. Let's move on to Bielefeld. Yep, we've been waiting for this one. Arminia Bielefeld's home opener against Jahn Regensburg. Oof, boy, where do we begin? It was a brutal game to watch. It was not one for set-piece purists, because it really looked like neither team could hit a target inside the 18-yard box. But Jan would do so in the third minute of stoppage time, when Nicholas Szybnowski found a cutting Benedict Gimba, and his header was enough to beat Stefanos Capino. Second half, Bielefeld tried to wrestle the ascendancy, and then they conceded moments into the second half. Maximilian Thalhammer's trickling outside of the box shot, again beating Capino, and then to compound the misery of the game, Ramos makes an error, and Minos Gurus gets his first Zweite Bundesliga goal, beating Capino in a 1-on-1, and the score ends 3-0. Statistically, the game says it was pretty even, but like the broken records that we are, taking your chances is pivotal. But one thing that really stood out in this game was just how harmless Bielefeld were in their final third, and frankly, they could have played another 90 minutes and it didn't really look like they were going to score.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, it was a horrible game to watch. I mean, hats off to Regensburg for using their chances, but I think in the end, the 3-0 was a bit high. They basically had two situations in the second half, and then those were both of the goals. It was very, very hot in the stadium, so it was even more difficult to follow this game. I don't know. I mean, first of all, I really know what Okugawa was thinking for at least two of the goals. I mean, the first one, I don't know why you would pair him with Benedict Gimba. The heading duel, like, why? Then for the second goal, he just, I don't know, stands there, does nothing, isn't coming back with them. The defense looked a bit more solid in the second half with switching to four in the back, putting getting Gebauer out, putting Tchaikovsky in, subbing, also Prietl out. He is out injured for the next couple of weeks at least. So yay. I mean, gotta say, it's not the, I don't know. Don't know how to put it, but at this stage, I think a break for him isn't the worst thing. I mean, obviously, Bastian Ochipka couldn't play yet because he came in on a free from Union Berlin last week. At the same time, that meant that Jakob Lawson left for Standard Liège, however you want to say it. I don't know. It's I listened to the interviews by Jani Serra and Olli Husing after the game. Olli Husing basically said he apologized to everyone who came to the stadium, that he doesn't know why they played that lethargic football for 90 minutes straight. I think it was right. And I mean, we know that Pokal games can be very, can help, but at the same time can just throw you more down the line. And Rostock away after that is not going to be easier. I know that Farta said that, they have to discuss tactical issues. I mean, at least I'm happy that it's being openly discussed. This was something that we didn't really see in the in the Bundesliga season. Just want to quickly touch on one thing, because I've read it a couple of times now, that people said, well, under Neuhaus, we've only lost two games in the whole season. Well, guys, don't compare this. That was the season where we nearly got relegated the year before. Neuhaus came in, we played an amazing second leg of the season, where he got to know the team, where they build that trust to each other, and Forte just is there since June. So chill. I don't like this at all, but give the team time. I think it's a problem that we saw the pre-season games, and I don't mean the wins. I just mean what happened on the pitch, that you could see the dynamics. I don't care if I see good dynamics and we lose 5-0 in the end. It's just how it worked together on the pitch. Klose was really, really pissed. But I think at least, and I know it sounds weird, but at least everyone I've heard statements from, they know they're disappointing the people. They know it can't continue. And they just don't say, well, Regensburg wasn't better. I don't really know why we lost this game. So this is not happening here. Jani Serra himself said that he had at least two big chances, because after halftime, it looked like for 5-6 minutes, like, it's going better. Serra with a double chance, and he said himself he needs to at least use one of those, and then it's 1-1, and I know how it continues then. Well, the thing is that I do very feel sorry for Serra, because I know that, like, around us, people have making deep sighs as soon as he gets the ball, and obviously that doesn't help. But Serra is still, for me, although he might be considered not as young as other players in the squad, but he's still a young player, and it doesn't help that you feel the unsureness of everyone in the stadium. So I hope for his sake, for example, that they get a what we call Erfolgserlebnis quite soon. This is also still not the relegation to the Dritte Liga already. Guys, chill, please. I know not everything is great, but it has been too much days. Piano, please. For Regensburg, obviously, because And you could see that they kind of wanted to replicate what they did in Darmstadt, have a very early goal. We gave them the opportunities. They didn't really use those. And yeah, for how, if I remember this correctly, at least at the start of the last season, we know that they were quite good through set pieces as well. This was horrible. I don't know if the re-signing of Sarpreet Singh will help. Not anytime soon, though, because he failed his... He didn't even came to a medical test in Bremen because they knew he's going to be out for at least 3 to 4 months and couldn't help right away. And I don't really know where you would sign him on loan then. Okay. Have fun. He's going to be there after the World Cup. Have fun. Not really sure about this. But yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, they won this. They won the week before. But I still have very, very bad throwback vibes because already in the second game, obviously they used a couple of chances they got, but over the majority of the time, they weren't good either. They didn't offer a lot. They were kind of just hoping on Bielefeld taking the lead. And, well, that didn't really work as well. So, yeah, all in all, sorry for everyone who watched that game in any sort of stage on the weekend.
I mean, I was watching the conference and Sky were doing everything they could to just avoid showing that game unless there was a goal. And it's so funny because I was just like sitting there on my laptop watching it and you'd hear Tor in Bielefeld and then you'd just be like, oh, maybe, no, Yanov scored. That's just what happened because, yeah, they anytime Bielefeld seemed to have wrestled the ascendancy, they would concede. Just before half-time, concede. Have a strong 5 to 6 minutes to start the second half, concede. And then obviously the unfortunate mistake from Ramos, and it wasn't the worst mistake of the match day, but it was pretty close. Yeah, so let's relax. It's match day 2. There's 32 more games to go. Anything can happen. Yes, both sides that were relegated last season are currently occupying spaces in the bottom 4. But let's just chill. There's a long season to go. Anything can happen. And, well, yeah. There are a number of teams that won't be happy with their start of the season. The next team we're about to talk about would be definitely one of those teams. But this is a marathon, not a sprint. In the Cup, Bielefeld at FR Ingers. They're playing that game in Koblenz, I believe, at Koblenz Stadium. Jan Regensburg, well, they probably have the toughest opponent. One of the toughest opponents in their first round matchup, they're hosting FC Köln. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting game for them. When we mentioned about a team that would not be happy with their start of the season, it's Karlsruhe. Has to be Karlsruhe. Obviously lost 5-0 last week. And it shocked everyone when Christian Eichner named the exact same back four and goalkeeper pairing for their home opener. As if it would get better. So it was the surprise of no one when they completely self-combusted on themselves in the first half defensively. Andreas Müller, Baris Atik, and then Moritz Bruni Kvarteng, who benefited from some slapstick defending when Daniel Gordon, he just bullet passed it to Kai Eisel. Eisel, who's a goalkeeper. Goalkeepers don't have the greatest touch or feel. He fumbles the ball, non-surprisingly, and Kvarteng practically walks it in for a 3-0 lead. And that's what it looked like at halftime. They had a couple of chances to score, but obviously it didn't work. A triple change was needed at halftime. Simone Rapp, Mikael Kaufmann, Kelvin Arazi. Remember the name, Arazi. Outstanding energy in the second half, and he played a pivotal role in the comeback. Because on 63 minutes, he assists Marvin Vanitzek with a brilliant goal outside the box. And then when Magdeburg looked like they're about to score a fourth, a quick counter-attack, Gondorf with a long ball. Dominik Reimann forgets that he plays goalkeeper, not centre-back. What on earth he's doing there, I don't know. But Mikael Kaufmann dribbles past him. And then with the presence of mind, trickles the ball into the back of the net. So they score twice in 2 minutes, and you think, hang on a minute. Karlsruhe have come to play in the second half. They were almost like, they were a bit lucky not to go down to a fourth goal. Isel does a really good deflection that stops Brunker from tapping the ball into the back post. They had their chances. Rapp had a couple of chances, but it wasn't enough. 3-2 the final score for Magdeburg. Magdeburg get their first win of the season and in their return to the Zweite Bundesliga. And I think this is a tough one because this was by far the best game on Sunday because Karlsruhe, who were just awful defensively, they figured it out. Somehow they were a bit better in the back four. But it's fair to say that it was a tale of two halves in the end. Karlsruhe got it together in the second half, and Kelvin Arazi in particular was fantastic. And certainly, if they're going to start a front three next in their next Zweite Bundesliga game, it has to be the three they subbed on because they were very impactful in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think I obviously only read the live ticker. I was like, some sort. Magdeburg is 3-0 up after 34 minutes. In Karlsruhe, this is like 8 conceded goals in 90 minutes for Karlsruhe. That's horrible. I mean, you guys say, especially for the second half, for the second goal, I'm sorry, there are 6 Karlsruhe players very centered in the box. And Baris Atik can do whatever he wants. So that's already not good if you very clearly have the upper hand or the majority numbers in your own box and there's someone who can just, like a flip a ball, just go through. So that was very impressive. I mean, obviously, the third goal with Gordon, talking about that, I think this is kind of a theme for the first two match days, that we have more than usual, really, communication mistakes between defenders or players and their goalkeepers. That happened in Bielefeld, obviously, happened in St. Pauli twice now, happened here. Then the second half obviously was better, as you've mentioned. I really like that for the Kaufmann goal, how obviously when Hyman was out of the game, that Kaufmann still looked up until the end whether he has the better shot or Rase, I think, was on the post. I looked up very long and always looked up and then decided it's the way is free for him and scored a good goal. But yeah, I mean, no matter how good the second half was with the substitutions, they should never concede this many goals, especially to, once again, what Karlsruhe said before the Paderborn game. Eichner said, we concede too many goals in the space of too few minutes. Yeah. And we saw this against Paderborn, and now we see it against Magdeburg. And it's an unnecessary way of strengthening your opponent. And I think this is one of games like these, stars like these, are one of the reasons why it's always very difficult for us to grab Karlsruhe. As we've mentioned before, the best performance nevertheless was by the fans when Jamie Lawrence went down. Luckily, he is by Karlsruhe's by Magdeburg's notification. He's up and running again. He's fine. Hope it's not going to be as warm as now in Frankfurt or against Frankfurt on Monday night. But that was very good by the Karlsruhe fans. I mean, Senna is a bit uncool if the media outlets then use that point of entrance or that point of picture where there are no flags and you can still see the guy lying there. This is not why they put that up there. So cheers. But yeah, that was once again how important fans are. And yeah, not sure what that game means for Karlsruhe, what the second half means for Karlsruhe. I think we can agree two goals there or not. It's not a good start for Karlsruhe, conceding 8 goals in 2 games. Is still not very good. And yeah, they have the opportunity to maybe, similar to Bielefeld, and just shoot some troubles away on the weekend. They also have an Oberliga fine with TSG Neustrelitz. So, yeah.
What we do know is that they can never play that back four again. We've seen it for 180 minutes, and it's awful, and it was painful. I mean, they eventually subbed out Marcel Franke for Florian Ballas, and it didn't matter when they subbed him out. Like, that's the thing. How does it come that a new promoted side can sub out their best player in Baris Atik? Because they can. They rested him for the second half because we don't need him. We're fine. We're 3-0 up. You have to change the game. And credit to Karlsruhe in the second half. They actually made the game entertaining. They had 26 shots on goal in the end from 37% possession. Unsurprising the amount of ball that Magdeburg had. That's just the way they're going to play. They're just going to have heaps of possession. But they got him on the counter. The second goal, both goals were counter-attacking goals. And they got Magdeburg in transition. One player who was excellent for Magdeburg, Florian mentioned him last week, was Andreas Müller. He's going to be he's a hell of a player. He was outstanding in this game. And, oof, geez, they've just got some good players, don't they? As Eva said, TSG Neustrelitz from the Oberliga is Karlsruhe's opponent. Eintracht Frankfurt, the Europa League champions, are coming to Magdeburg for the first round of the Cup. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the final 3 matches. And we're going to start at the Holstein Stadion. It's Holstein Kiel and Kaiserslautern. Kaiserslautern were hoping to make it 2-2 when they headed to Kiel on match day 2. An interesting encounter for both sides. Kiel, of course, having their 2-2 draw against Greuther Fürth, so they were hoping on match day 2 that it wouldn't be so tight. I think I've said the word 2 too much, so too bad. So, the game started, and yeah, it definitely seemed as Kiel had the better of the opportunities in the first half, and they would open the scoring. Initial shot coming in, saved by Thomas Dana, and the header created and finished by Daniel Hanslick. Might be a familiar name for Kiel fans because he himself was a Kiel player. Second half came around and Kiel very much were back in business. Much more attacking, much more aggressive. The switch to a back four worked well for this game in particular. One person who they relied on a lot was Fabian Riese. Had a strong game last week and he decided to add to the tally of 0-2. He scored twice in the space of 6 minutes. And Kiel went from 1-0 down to 2-1 up. Just in case you thought the number 2 hadn't been ridden to the ground, here's another one for you. Terence Boyd, the man with the great tattoo on his arm, the classic three-eye celebration. He got his first Zweite Bundesliga goal. Initially looked like Kiel were able to prevent Boyd from scoring, but some individual brilliance saw Terence Boyd on 62 minutes get his first goal and make the score 2-2. Kiel tries so desperately to get away from the number 2 with a third. Jan Vita Arp came close, but no cigar. In the end, 2-2 was the final score. And breathe. So, a good positive start to the season for Kaiserslautern. 4 points out of a possible 6. They've left 2 on the table, but I don't think they'll be too upset about it. It's a good result for Lautern, and yeah, they showed great fight back considering they were very much second best in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm very difficult to describe this game in one word. because, first of all, I think we got to hand it to Kaiserslautern that they, after those 2 games, similar probably to Magdeburg, they both don't really play, or especially those second games, they don't play like typical promoted sites. They offer a lot to the game, no matter who their opponents are. And with that game, I'm still not sure. I think it's okay it ended in a draw. I think probably Kaiserslautern is a bit more disappointed, but at the same time, towards the end, Kiel had a chance to make it 3-2 as well. So I think a draw is deserved, but I think this game always had their moments. It's moments that it shifted very quickly. I mean, obviously, Kiel had that momentum when Riese scored twice. And I think it was even twice with a header. At least the second one looked like something he really worked on during the summer break. Mm-hmm. Like the way he went into the air, it looked very... that he wanted to offer a bit more than his normal like strength on the ground. So that was good. Also, it's okay to score set piece goals. Nice to know. Nice to have. I mean, what I wasn't sure about is someone I wasn't sure about throughout the game was actually Timo Becker. I thought he didn't really look good in this game. He didn't look good for both of the goals, especially not the second one. He just loses Boyd in his back, whatever. So I wasn't sure about him in this game. But yeah, I mean, I think Kaiserslautern had a good way of kind of scoring his goals around that Holstein Kiel momentum and really putting down the momentum with a goal just 5 minutes after Kiel took the lead. So I think that was very well timed. But yeah, as mentioned, I think in the end, although, for example, XG might suggest otherwise, and that Kiel was basically very efficient with getting two goals out of two shots on target, but I think all in all, both clubs can live with a point here.
100%. I mean, for Kiel, they've had two tricky games where they've had their opportunities. They were very fortunate to get a point on match day one. They were very much second best here. Better application. I feel like the back three combination they had didn't really work that well with Lorenz. Commander was really good, and then Becker, who just had a really awful day at the office. And so yeah, it'd be interesting to see. They certainly looked a bit more capable structurally when they moved to the back four, so I'm intrigued to see what they're going to look like going forward. But yeah, they showed promise. I mean, if they can get Pikler and Arp into the goals, they're obviously very important contributors to their team. Also, best of luck to Steven Skripsky, who came on as a sub, then got hurt. But we did get to see Finn Bartels, which was one for the Bremen fans or the St. Pauli fans or the other clubs he's played for. But yeah, so yeah, good result for both sides. Kiel have Waldhof Mannheim in the cup. Kaiserslautern are hosting Freiburg, which should be a really interesting cup tie, and I think one that Kaiserslautern could sneak away with victory in. Now let's make a move. We're going to go all the way down to the south of Germany when Heidenheim took on Eintracht Braunschweig. Heidenheim hoping to make it two wins on the bounce. Braunschweig were hoping to take some solace after this good performance against Hamburg and turn it into some sort of reward. It didn't really go to plan. Doesn't help when an unfortunate Philipp Strumpf concedes an own goal just 10 minutes into the game. An excellent cross from Martin Busch, and Strumpf just trying to clear, but he put it into his own net. Braunschweig did have a really good period after half time. Emmanuel Ferrei had a couple of good chances, and then they went 2-0 down when Jan-Niklas Bester found Tim Kleindienst. And Kleinitz got his first goal of the season. It didn't seem like Braunschweig could really muster anything. They were really harmless in the final third. And then Heidenheim would get a third in the end. Florian Pick almost messed up a 3-on-1 situation for Heidenheim. He gets bailed out. When his shot's initially saved by Hoffman, it finds Kevin Sessa, and Sessa puts into the back of the net, very much bowing to the crowd as if he had performed one of the theatre pieces, some sort of thespian art. But anyway, I enjoyed that celebration. That's something I probably would have done as well. So, Heidenheim, they're one of two sides that haven't conceded a goal this season. The other is Jahn Regensburg, who are top of the table. Braunschweig, two defeats from two. They are one of a couple of sides who have yet to score this season. So, let's review. We know how hard it is to win in Heidenheim. We also know it's how extremely hard it is to win against Heidenheim when you concede early. And even though Braunschweig had that 10-15 minute period to start the second half, they really were unmatched in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially about Braunschweig, a lot what we said about them against HSV, this was very similar. I mean, it was not that they didn't have any chances at all, but only out of 14 shots on goal, only two of them were in target. And yeah, that was similar to the week before. I think this is their biggest problem at the moment, that they just can't get any sort of accuracy behind their shots. And I mean, at the same time, then conceding, like they conceded the first goal with their own goal. It's just all set up for a horrible match. And Heidenheim wasn't necessarily really the better in a way of pure dominant team, but they didn't really have to do anything. And yeah, in the end, they put their dominance on the pitch in the second half with Kleindienst and Sessa, as you mentioned, although the Sessa goal was very weird as well. I think Schimmer, who misses first, right?
Pick.
And
Florian Pick.
Pick, Pick. Yeah, sorry. Game had...
All good.
Weird. no, but yeah, it was... a good and deserved win for Heidenheim. We could discuss if it's a goal too high or not, but I think in the end, three goals are fair, because Braunschweig just did too many mistakes in the back, and same time didn't offer enough up front, especially for considering that they had shared possession pretty much. That was like, nope. I'm not sure about Braunschweig. Maybe they can. I'm not really keen on the DFB Pokal match against Hertha. I think it's always very... I think games like this are very weird because we haven't seen any Bundesliga side play yet, due to the fact that they start the week after. So I think that's just a bit difficult to see where Hertha is at the moment. But because of that, I would kind of lean to the speculation that this is going to be a very weird game where there's one team who has been playing two league games but isn't really happy with that, needs to find ways to score goals. And at the same time, you have Hertha, who didn't get relegated, but only like with a bit of luck and through playoff games, and are still in a phase where you don't really know some stuff, and this is the first game of the new season for them. So yeah, I'm not sure about this. I don't know about you, but this is one of the games where I wouldn't be keen to sit in front of the TV, let's be honest.
This is why we're hopefully blessed with the conference for the Pokal. One thing that probably strikes me with Braunschweig is they just need to show that they can put the ball in the back of the net. What a world of difference it can make for them, their prospects going forward, if they can see one in a proper game, just find the twine. So they could cause an upset. It is Hertha. They're known for the weird. So we'll see, but they need to be better in front of goal. It's the kind of thing that can really derail a team. And if you were to kind of put them linear to a side from the last couple of years, they're very similar to what Ingolstadt were doing last season, where they, you know, they could put themselves in positions to score goals, but ultimately they didn't finish their dinner and someone else would. So yeah, they've got Hertha. Heidenheim have FL Illertissen from the Regionalliga Bayern. Winnable game for them, but yeah, a good comfortable win for Heidenheim. They are 2-2. And our final game of the match day 2 review brings us to Darmstadt. Darmstadt took on Sandhausen. De Leon were hoping to get back to winning ways after their defeat in Regensburg. Sandhausen were hoping to make it 2-2. Quick starting Darmstadt opened the scoring. Braden Manu, who has a different number this year, not 33, he's wearing 7. He opened the scoring, a beautiful goal, and I will forever love his celebration, getting the bucket hat, and he's very much a fan at heart, and I love to see it, and it was a really good, really good finish to open his account. Then Sandhausen scored from a set piece. Darmstadt were unable to clear their lines. Alexander Zverev with a good finish, and it was 1-1. Darmstadt certainly looked a little bit more the likelier, to make an impression on this game. And on 55 minutes, Marvin Melem, who is definitely hoping to have a better season than his previous couple, he opened his account, and it was 2-1 to Darmstadt. And that's how it ended. They very much celebrated this one hard, and it's always good to get your first win, but let's just tone it down a little bit. So yeah, good win for them, Eva. Very much a much needed response. It might not have been convincing at times, but nonetheless, it's a victory for them.
Yeah, definitely. And I really like the duo, Braden Manu and Marvin Melem for the second goal. They look very good there. Very dynamic motion from both players in that situation. And that wasn't really something Sandhausen could handle. I don't know. I think this game could have ended in a draw as well. It was a bit weird. I mean, good start for Darmstadt, then they kind of backed down a bit, and Sandhausen found the back of the net here. And then Sandhausen can nearly make it 2-1 through Bachmann. But all in all, I think Sandhausen was then defensively was quite stable, at least towards the end of the first half. And the second half, then they had from time to time when there was a high ball coming in in the first half as well, and it was kind of deflected towards the edges of the post. Sandhausen had problems finding a way of kind of regrouping itself, and you could see that Darmstadt kind of tried to do this, to use their chaos, and it didn't always work, but sometimes you'd see that at least then you had Fabian Holland in the back trying one of his typical shots on target, and this, you could see this 2 or 3 times, I think. This was a bit better in the second half. As mentioned, all in all, I think draw could have been there, but I think if you would have picked a team for a win, I think it would have been Darmstadt. And as mentioned, up front you had Tietz and Manu. This wasn't clear from the get-go, but yeah, Manu was really the player who stood out there. And I think what we have been saying, Tietz really needs like a second partner or a partner up front. It doesn't really work as well alone. So yeah, Manu can be one. Although I hate his celebration. I don't care if it's coffee or heads or any sort of stealing your coach's heads. I don't care. It's stupid. Please just celebrate the goal and get on with it.
Wow, I love the passion. One thing that I was interested with the way Darmstadt were going to form is that obviously they didn't have Patrick Pfeiffer because he was sent off. Isherwood was injured. They went with the back three, which we had an inkling they might would have gone with Muller, Jazula, and Riedel. And then Riedel got hurt, so We got to see a debut of Christoph Zimmermann, who they just signed from Norwich, who we would have mentioned in last week's podcast, but of course the podcast had been recorded and produced, and then of course Darmstadt did us really dirty on that one. So that's how it ended. It'll be interesting to see if they stick with the back three, because this iteration of Darmstadt seems to look a little bit more comfortable in a back three setting. So it'll be interesting to see how they go with that. Before we go, we like to talk about our kick tip. Two match days in, let's look at our top scorer for the match day. It was Ina Reno. I love it. Excellent. He top scored with 16, so congratulations. Well done. It was a tricky match day, and there were lots of ebbs and flows in the score, and yeah, there were a lot of changes. And the leader for the kick tip is me. I don't know how that's happened. I feel like the best way to continue the kick tip is to just end it at match day two, call it the other 32 games are friendlies, and we'd just be happy with the scoreboard. I think the leaderboard as it is pretty good. I'm sure Eva's not going to agree with me, but I'm pretty happy with that as it is. Just let's keep it that way.
You're just going to go the Regensburg of last season, Matthew. We all know.
It seems very likely, but then again, you said I was the Jakov Medic of the podcast, and then your internet completely fell apart. So, I mean,
Well, I don't do hard things. They're not something in between here.
Exactly. Of course, one thing that we did last season was our podcast recommendations, and I'm going to let Eva discuss our recommendations for this week.
Yeah, the Euro 2022 are coming to an end, and before they do, go check out... I'm very sorry it's in German again, but for example, today's episode is with the new head coach of Bochum's women's team, for example. Obviously, they're discussing the England-Sweden game. They're going to discuss the Germany-France game as well. And when we see each other in 2 weeks, we will know who won the Euros. And there is another podcast, not only for the Euros, concerning women's football, but in general. It's called Lottes Erben. It's really good as well. Go check it out. It's a fantastic name, obviously. I'm already very behind that name. Go check that out. And have fun with the DFB Pokal matches on the weekend. If you're traveling to any... one, make sure to all Hamburg fans, have considered some time in front of the Bayreuth, where you buy your drinks. It can take up to 45 minutes. Have fun with that. Stay safe with the weather, drink enough water, pack sunscreen.
Yes.
Don't get into fights. And obviously, I hope we see all of you back when the league returns in 1.5 weeks.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Might as well have ended it there, to be honest. Thank you, Eva. Pleasure as always to be talking about this crazy league that we get to discuss every single... Yep. Take a bow. Congratulations. Well done. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time to discuss all the action from match day 3. Until then, enjoy the Pokal. Enjoy the time off, because I am going to need it for a little bit after the first two match days. If it keeps at this pace, I am going to need many more lie downs. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.